Greetings to you, sweet friends. It is I, D. Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, now with premium sound. Some of you may not be aware of this, but a few years ago, I got into a pretty bad contract with a company called Zathor Labs. You're probably familiar with their jingle, but if not, here it is to refresh your memory. Zathor Labs. It was 1998. I was in Beijing. I was sitting across from a man in a velvet suit with a handlebar mustache. He was smoking a cigarette that smelled like moths playing tennis with mothballs. It was a very strange and interesting day, perhaps one of the most interesting days of my life. I was sitting with Rutarg Winder, the CEO of Zathor Labs. I was in desperate need of money. I was wearing rags. I was in rough shape, to put it mildly. I'd been on a mescaline bender. That and a few lime ritas had gone to the wrong part of my belly and had led me down a very dark path. It was almost incomprehensible to imagine that my entire life had been transformed by simply opening an email. 2 weeks prior, I had received this email from a woman in Beijing.
Dear Duncan Trussell, you seem hot. I'm horny and full of fun. I love kinky stuff and want to party. Will you come to Beijing with money so we can party? Let's fuck forever. Patricia Lunalila.
It was less than 4 hours later that I was sipping gin on a one-way flight to Beijing. The gin was doing nothing to abnegate the nervousness that flustered my brain. I kept going through a checklist in my mind. Suitcase. Check. Cash. Check. I had everything that she had requested. I kept thinking of this poem by Albert Camus. Zoo. By Albert Camus.
When a man journeys to a zoo, he does not see the collectite and chain of gold that yanks him into cage. There in that place, where chimp chests are laid bare with shavers and cream, chimp nipples and nipple of man. Towers of loneliness.
This perfect poem by Albert Camus perfectly describes what every new lover feels as they in plane ride across the planet to meet some new lips that their mouth will fall upon. I'm going to tell you what happened to me in Beijing and why I got into a contract with Zathor Labs right after this.
American Hysteria is a brand new podcast from Skylark and me, Chelsea Weber Smith. It explores our moral panics, urban legends, and conspiracy theories, how they shape our psychology and culture, and why we end up believing them. I'll cover moral panics like stranger danger, satanic panic, and Tinky Winky's homosexuality, urban legends like poison Halloween candy, and conspiracy theories like the Illuminati's secret plan for world domination. I was raised around a ton of wild conspiracy theories, and I know how easy it can be to freak out over the sensational, the rare, and the untrue. I want to understand why we fear the wrong things, and how these fears shape our past, present, and future in sometimes devastating ways, and also what these bizarre panics might be covering up. I promise to show you a good old time while I try to figure it all out. The first two episodes of American Hysteria drop November 12th. Head over and subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
I was met at the Beijing airport by a strikingly beautiful woman named Patricia. As it turned out, she had seen some of the exercise videos that I'd been putting out. International Workout is what it was called at the time, and she had been attracted not only by my physique, but by my training patterns. We spent the next 5 days passionately making love and training together. But at the end of the fifth day, I woke to a sweat-soaked bed, musky and pungent with the stink of our lovemaking, and a gun firmly placed against my temple. This was the infamous Rutarg Winder. Rutarg Winder, the CEO of Xathor Labs. He kidnapped me, wrenched me out of the bed of my new lover, and forced me into a horrific contract where I agreed to produce podcasts with really bad sound quality. And 2 days ago, that contract expired. So now you can enjoy premium sound from the DTFH, except for this interview, because in this interview, I was still, and I guess some other interviews that I recorded previously when I was still under the Xathor contract. But from this point forward, it's going to be great sound. And thank you all for being so patient with the shitty sound quality of this podcast. It's been a real depressing thing to know that I have this pristine sound equipment and an expert level understanding of how to engineer audio, and I haven't been able to use any of it because of a dumb contract I signed when I was a kid, drunk on sex, gin, mescaline, and lime ritas. We have got a fantastic podcast for you today. Alan Sachs is here with us. We're going to jump right into it, but first, some quick business. This episode of the DTFH has been brought to you by Audible. How does anybody have time to sit around and read, to lay in your hammock and open a book and just relax? Come on, there's cleaning to do. Half of us are either hang gliding or lifting weights or climbing mountains. Some of us are hit men or hit women, stalking a hit, and some of us are out there farming or painting. We're tap dancing or giving tap dancing lessons, and there just isn't as much time as there used to be to sit with a book and read. This is why I love Audible. If I need to wash dishes or clean, or if there's just driving to be done, I can actually enjoy a book simultaneously. Here's what I'm listening to right now on Audible. Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, which is fantastically, infuriatingly fantastic. It's by Chogyam Trungpa, and it's narrated by John Baker. I'm listening to Hallelujah Anyway by Anne Lamott. I've got the New American Standard Bible on here, though. I've got to admit, I didn't spend as much time with it as I thought I would. The Ramayana, narrated by Ram Dass. How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan. I have not listened to that one yet. Calypso by David Sedaris. I love Audible. I love having all these wonderful books being read to me by professional narrators. It's like being a kid all over again, only instead of your mom or your dad who barely know how to read, you've got an actual professional narrator reading books to you, and it's just fantastic. Try them out if you haven't tried them out yet. Right now, for a limited time, you can get 3 months of Audible for just $6.95 a month. That's more than half off the regular price. Give yourself the gift of listening. And while you're at it, think about giving the gift of Audible to someone on your list. What a wonderful, wonderful gift for that busy person in your life. Go to audible.com/DTFH or text DTFH to 500-500 to get started. That's DTFH is what you would send as the text to 500-500 to get started. And again, right now for a limited time, you can get 3 months of Audible for just $6.95 a month. That's more than half off the regular price. Truly, truly, what a wonderful, wonderful thing. In my day, when we wanted to get audio, any kind of recording of books, it was like ridiculously, insanely expensive per book, like $50, $40, a big fat set of CDs. Now you can just go online and get any book. And by the way, The Gunslinger, my God. If you want to hear a well-read, well-narrated book, The Gunslinger. I think it's like the first three are the same narrator. I believe his name is Frank something, but I'm not sure about that. Regardless, give Audible a shot. That's audible.com/DTFH or text DTFH to 500-500 to get started. My dear loves, a sincere Thank you to those of you who have subscribed over at patreon.com. If you head over to patreon.com/DTFH, you can sign up. You will get commercial-free episodes of the DTFH, and you will also have access to our Discord server where many of us hang out and have conversations. Once a month, I put an hour-long ramble on there. To those of you who have expressed some dismay at commercials appearing inside episodes, this is one way for you to get pristine episodes shot right into your pulsating auditory jugular vein. It's also a great way for you to support the podcast. But another great way for you to support the podcast is to support the sponsors. But the real truth is, you listening is all I ask. Truly, truly, I am grateful to you for spending any time at all listening to the DTFH. P.S. We got lots of merch in the shop. If you're interested in getting some Duncan Trussell Family Hour gear, it is at DuncanTrussell.com. Okay, pals. Man, I got to tell you, this episode and this entire week I've been working, not just on the intro to this episode, maybe it's a little too long, I don't know, but on the sound equipment itself. Getting all this stuff wired in, I got an Apollo X6. It's a very nice bit of audio gear, but there is a lot more than just getting the gear. You've got to dial stuff in, put the right stuff on it. I'm trying to learn this stuff. People go to graduate school to learn how to do this. So my apologies if the sound is not completely dialed in yet. I just want you to know I have heard your complaints regarding the way the sound used to be, and I am working literally night and day trying to get everything dialed in so that I can offer really great sound to you guys. I can't believe it took me so long to do it, but now I'm doing it, and hopefully pretty soon it will just have that nice NPR sound to it. But until then, let me know. Give me feedback. I am I'm really interested in figuring out how to refine the sound on the podcast. And I love you guys, and I want you to not have to deal with the weird cognitive dissonance that comes from wondering how the fuck can somebody with a podcast not have good sound? What's he thinking? Is he out of his gourd? Today's guest is so fucking cool. I'm so lucky to have met him. A big thanks to Martin Olson for introducing me. Alan Sachs is a producer, an artist. He made a show that was a big hit when I was growing up called Welcome Back, Cotter. And he also made a show called Chico and the Man. And he also made a bunch of other great shows. But he was also he is a punk. And he was in the punk scene. And this is a human who has so many cool stories about living in LA through the 70s and the 80s up until today that we are going to do many, many more podcasts together. He's a new friend of mine. He's really inspiring to me, not just because of his amazing stories, but also because he is a practitioner of Nyingma Buddhism. I think that's the right way to say it. And you'll see. Why am I even telling you what he's like? You're about to hear him. He's a wonderful person who is soon to have a really great podcast coming out himself. You'll hear more about this during this episode. So now, without further ado, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, Alan Sachs. Also, unfortunately, or fortunately, as part of working on the sound, I got a brand new computer, so I'm missing some files I usually work with, meaning I don't have the theme song. So this is going to be theme song free, or I'm just going to play some guitar chords as a theme song. Why am I even telling you this? I could have just jumped into the episode. Dogs are barking at the moon. This guitar is out of tune. Now they're howling, not just at the big ball in the sky. They're screaming because I'm singing, and that's no lie. It's DTFH. It's the DTFH. has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, that's for you recording your music?
That's for me being high and wanting to like dial in aliens.
What the fuck did I hear? Oh, no, it was you I heard the other night. Did you just do something with aliens? Yeah, you sent this on your show.
Who with aliens?
Yeah.
A channeler? The Paul Seligman?
No, I heard that too.
Oh, yeah, the alien thing. Yeah, that's...
Some guy... fuck was doing that? Maybe it was Selig. I don't know. But it was very recently, and you sent out some signal.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
What show was that?
Oh,
was
yeah, it? That's the last episode, man.
Yeah, what was that? I started listening to that. And you played some, you know, alien stuff at the beginning of it.
I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, the reason for doing a podcast, even though it's wonderful, I mean, it's like the best thing in my life to be able to have a job like this, but that's secondary to me. What's incredible about it is when I find myself sitting across from people like you, and it gives me goosebumps to imagine that you're listening to my podcast, and it really does blow my mind.
I'm listening to everyone, man. And this is before I knew you. I told you that. Everyone. I look for the Duncan Trussell Family Hour.
Yeah. When Martin reached out to me, it was just a very odd moment, you know, because like, I know it was ages ago, but welcome back, man. That made an imprint on me. Like that was a serious show.
Yeah,
I still have the theme song in my head.
Uh-huh.
Welcome back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It burned. What do you call it when it burns something in your brain? You know, a brain worm or something? Or
it's a
sound worm?
A meme.
A meme? Is that what it is?
I don't know.
No. Oh, but it burns into your head. Absolutely.
And so then when we were hanging out and I realized, you know, the strange connections we have. You're connected to Ram Dass.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Buddhism.
Yeah.
And all, and like the comedy store in the 70s.
They don't even belong together.
Yeah. It's very, very, very odd. And so then that's why I realized, like, this is like the dream guest for this podcast.
I love that. Thank you so much.
So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Duncan.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, I love it. Equally. You know, you're playing ping pong. You need somebody that's good opposite you. I don't play ping pong, but that's, you know, that's great.
Yeah, man.
That's great, man. I appreciate that. I was thinking if I would tell you how I met Ram Dass.
That'd be awesome.
I was invited to an event in Beverly Hills. It was a dinner party, small, maybe 20 some odd people, for Jerry Brown.
Wow.
He was running for governor.
No shit. Wow.
And Ram Dass was there.
Wow. What year was this?
I was trying to think. So, I'll tell you, about 74.
Wow.
Around 7, before you were even thinking about incarnating on this planet.
April 20th. I incarnated on April 20th, 74. Yeah. So I could have been here already. I don't know.
Yeah. So I was there. And there was Ram Dass. And it just blew my mind. I probably one of the few that knew who he was. Because I had known Timothy Leary
but this was post Maharaji Ram Dass. This was Be Here Now Ram Dass, right? Like
he had just come back. He came back a month ago, man. He had just written Be Here Now. That was like hitting everybody of my generation. We finally had, holy shit, man, what is he writing about? This is amazing. And it's like a picture book. It's so easy to read. You know, so it was Guru Maharaji, he asked me what I did, and I said, I'm producing a television show called Chico and the Man. It hadn't gone on the air yet. It was in the summertime. It hadn't gone on the air yet, but they were running the promos. And he said, you know, with that Puerto Rican kid who goes up and down. I had a head that, remember Freddie's joke where he had, like he was one of those balls in the back of a car? Yeah. Ram Dass did that. So I said to him, wow. Holy shit, you know that comedian? He said, he looked at me and said, do you think I live in a cave?
Wow.
And it was great, man.
That's so cool.
It was really cool.
Was he, that is wild. That is like, you know, Ram Dass has had all these different phases.
Yeah.
And fresh back from India Ram Dass, that's the long haired Ram Dass,
yeah.
Like the glow, like the you know, still taking LSD Ram Dass, you know, I think.
Not sure. I don't remember what he said in that book, but could have been taking little micro doses. I know he was probably smoking.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. But it was amazing to be with him. And it changed my life that moment. You know, to be near Ram Dass was something else.
How do you, when you say change your life, what do you mean? Like how?
Well, I was looking for a teacher at that time. I didn't know where, there were so many different things. The 70s in LA, the mid 70s around this time, was nuts. You didn't know where to, it was like your show, man. You didn't know who to listen to. You know, it was all coming at you like, and that's why I love your show so much.
Thank you.
Because it's still just, you're exposing me to shit that it blows my mind.
Wow, you know? Man.
Duncan, I'm telling you. You know, it blows me out of the water.
Yeah, well, me too. I mean, This for me is just like a trap for gurus. You know,
yeah,
I get these
exactly.
enlightened beings, and they like, I get to sit with them, and they blow my mind too. That's just what is happening. Like, if your mind's being blown, my mind's being blown.
Yeah, yeah.
You
that's,
know,
I realize that, and then I'm saying, wow, that's really a blessing that you get to do that. But you're also doing something really important. That you are putting these people, you're introducing these people to the world, to a lot of people. You know, there's people you have on your show that I never even heard. What's his name? Lucian Graves?
Oh, sure.
Graves?
Yeah.
I never heard of that guy.
Temple of Satan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how about today? I get an email, a text message that's, you know, just because you're interested, it says, the Temple of Satan is suing Netflix.
I know.
So, and at the same time, the town of Paradise is fucking on fire. I mean, what is going on, man?
Well,
you know?
My guess is there's no correlation.
No, but...
But I did see a very sad... Somebody tweeted this very sad thing to me. I don't know how I ended up on the tweet... you know, sometimes you end up on these tweet chains.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
You're at, and this guy tweeted this very sad tweet. As a pastor, you know, I think I try not to just tell people about abundance, but the reality of hell. And now seeing what's happening, it was like four images. One of them, the Satanic Temple in some kind of march. Another one, I don't know, some dude who had like apparently like. Implanted something in his forehead. And then something that looks awesome, which I'll never get to go to, unfortunately, which is in Colombia. Someone's opened up some church to Satan, but it looks like Stanley Kubrick
really
designed the interior. You know,
it's
like really, really cool. Like it's definitely not, it's really funny and really cool. It's got that carny feeling.
I love it.
Satanism
love it.
Sometimes
yeah,
has
yeah,
attached
yeah.
to it, you know, and, What's your take on Satan? What do you think about Satanism? What's your feelings about it?
It's, you know, it's like, I think it's very close to Buddhism.
Hmm.
I saw that in Damien's book.
Oh, yeah.
And,
sure.
You know, he talks about being a Zen practitioner through sitting there and, you know, doing visualizations.
Yeah.
So... you know,
but I mean, does he self-identify as a Satanist?
I have to go a little deeper on that. I'm not sure.
Hey guys, I got a message from Alan this morning. He wanted to clarify something regarding this question that I asked him. It's actually a dumb question because I was sort of halfway through Damien's book and he isn't at all a Satanist. There's nothing in there about that at all. But yet I asked the question, and that was dumb on my part. Anyway, Alan sent this awesome voice memo to me to answer the question.
So Duncan, you asked me, does Damien identify as a Satanist?
And I said, I don't know. I have to go a little deeper. But in thinking about it, listening to the podcast, and in retrospect, that wasn't the answer. I know in my heart, Damien is absolutely not a Satanist. He's a magician. He's an amazing visualizer, a meditator, and a teacher. Okay, thanks, Duncan.
Let's wrap this weird interruption up with a quote from the notorious Mark Twain.
I have always felt friendly towards Satan. Of course, that is ancestral. It must be in the blood, for I could not have originated it. That's in the autobiography of the blasphemer himself, Mark Twain. Now back to the podcast.
Hail Satan. Just kidding. There's a lot of problems when it comes to like practicing what is, you know, what people call magic or whatever, which is really just like a kind of religion or a kind of practice that I guess it kind of reminds me of the Aghoris in India, you know, the...
I don't know them.
Shaivites, they worship Shiva, they do magic.
Oh, okay. They're,
you know, it kind of reminds me of that to some degree. But, you know, we had this whole beautiful, magical, spiritual tradition here in the United States and in Europe that got, like, wiped out. It got wiped out by, you know, people calling themselves Christians. And that's real. That's not some conspiracy theory. They're burning them alive.
Yeah.
And
they're killing
them and cutting their heads off and going into their groves and desecrating the grove. They're basically, I think you could say they were doing the thing that is currently happening to the Tibetans or has happened to the Tibetans with the invasion of China happened to an entirely different religion, except that religion got mostly just wiped off the map. So now what's going on is like we have these people who see a goat and they're like, that's the devil.
It's the devil, the goat
sitting in the hoofs. And no one even spends any amount of time asking themselves, why are goats considered evil? Is there a less evil? I mean, like, if I had to, like, bees are more evil than goats.
No, little tiny heads. They're like lambs.
Yeah, they're like lambs with weird eyes.
Yeah. But Kenneth Anger told me that look at the cover of Goat's Head Soup. And
what's Goat's Head Soup?
Oh, it's a Rolling Stones album.
Okay.
It's a Rolling Stone.
That's great. I was thinking like Chicken Soup for the Soul.
No. And it's
Goat
a
Weekly.
It's a picture it's a picture of, I think it's Mick Jagger, sort of with a goat's head, like on his face, and he's got like menstrual blood on his mouth, and he's wiping it off. And Kenneth said, that's scaring people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Think of that. So here, like, imagine if, like, he'd had a bee superimposed over his head, and his face was covered in, like, just like the dripping love juice of whoever's pussy he was licking.
That's what that was, yeah.
You know, if that had happened, everybody like, cool, man, he's like a horny bee. But like, you could put a goat in menstrual blood. One is like the prerequisite for one of my favorite dishes, goat cheese, at least on salads. The other is a prerequisite for life to happen on the fucking planet. And you put those over his face, and everybody's like, he's in league with Lucifer! You know, it's ridiculous.
The
symbology is not diabolical at all.
Yeah, I don't know where it comes from.
Well, I think it comes from, I think there's like a mischievous, carny, coyote sense, wouldn't you say? Like, whenever I've met these Satanists in general, there's a trickster sense to them.
Absolutely. Well, Ram Dass calls it, he calls them rascals.
Yeah.
Is that his word he used?
That's right.
He used to use that word.
Yeah.
He said, I'm a rascal. He called Christian Das a rascal, you know.
Yeah.
Have you heard the Anton LaVey podcast?
No, Anton LaVey.
Not him, but they're doing his bio in a podcast on cults.
Oh, cool.
And he was a carny.
I know.
He was definitely a carny.
And he was funny. Did you ever meet him?
No.
How'd you meet Kenneth Anger? Can you, first of all, just describe to the listeners who Kenneth Anger is, just so they know, because they might not know.
Kenneth Anger is like one of the foremost independent film directors in the world. I mean, he's made movies that he's revered by in the 60s. And now today, the current crop of, you know, millennials are freaking out over Kenneth Anger.
Yeah.
But he was also, he was a, I guess he was a practicing Satanist.
Wasn't he more, I mean, I do, what's tattooed on his chest? What's that thing?
Satan. Oh, Lucifer.
Lucifer.
What does that mean?
What?
What does that mean? That
Lucifer?
Lucifer is on his chest.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a big, nice one, goth lettering. And, yeah. And so he has that. He also has a jacket, a satin jacket that says Lucifer on the back.
Oh, yeah.
That my daughter is dying for. It's like $1,000. I'm saying, you got to relax on that, Sim. I'll get you that for Christmas. We'll see.
What do you mean? He still makes them and sells them?
Yeah, on his website.
No shit.
Yeah.
No, those are cool.
It's
those
cool.
Super cool.
It's cool. It's really beautiful jacket.
Yeah,
It's beautiful.
I know.
But, and it's written, it's just, it's embroidered. It's very nice.
Very nice.
Very classy.
Yeah.
And so I met Kenneth. I met so many people in the same way you do through what I do in the entertainment industry as a producer. I wanted to produce Hollywood Babylon, Kenneth's book, as a movie.
Wow.
And I tracked him down. And that began our relationship. And I worked with him on that for like 2 years. I did that with Leary. That's how I met Leary. I wanted to do a sitcom like Mary Hartman, a serialized version of family living on the space station, when Leary was doing his, you know, his home, aliens, you know, going from planet to planet, traveling in the stars. And that's how I met Leary. I met him at Dantana's.
That is so wild, man. But I want to jump to Leary, but let's stay on Kenneth Anger for a second.
This
isn't also the sense when we were hanging out for the first time, I thought, my God, like this is like 1,000 hours of conversation potentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I can't just jump.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
From
sorry.
Kenneth Anger.
Sorry.
To Leary that quick, man. Because I think there's something that just, you know, one of the things that really bugs me a lot right now, is like, and that for one, like because I've had Satanists or the head of the Temple of Satan on my podcast, or the, you know, the new incarnation of it.
Well, and, you mean that was the former, there's the
Lucian.
Lucian, yeah. But that's the Temple of Satan as opposed to the Satanic Temple. There are two.
Yeah. Wait, which, hold
on. Anton LaVey was the Satanic Temple.
God, so confusing.
And Lucian is the Temple of Satan.
The Temple of Satan.
Yeah,
that's right.
He reversed it.
Yeah. But there are two, you know, communities of Satanists.
Yeah, yeah.
And so one thing that really bothers me, I don't mind being lumped in with Satanists at all. Like, that doesn't bother me at all. I'm not a Satanist. I don't identify as a Satanist. But my encounters with Satanists throughout my life has always been mostly good. You know, it's like, and if it's been bad, it's only been bad because of my own, like, how would you say, inability to discipline myself, because they got great drugs. Some of them.
I'm having dinner with one of them tonight.
Oh, you are? But in general, I find them to be like really ethical and moral, and I find them to be
intelligent.
And intelligent.
It was probably that I sent you a, you picked up a transmission from me. And that was, I was thinking before coming here, do I want to talk to you about Joey Diaz and Naropa, or do I want to talk about this thing, or
talk about their Buddhism, man? Yeah, like that's the thing that blew my mind. I mean, everything, like,
yeah,
because you're just so deeply intertwined with so many things that I love.
It's likewise.
Like, what do we pick from?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But
you know, this will be part one.
Okay, great. Yeah,
you know,
hopefully,
and it's right. It's exactly, and it's this woman who's this executive at Stitcher, who said, "Do you know Duncan Trussell?" She came in when I was doing a recording over there, and she said, "Do you know Duncan Trussell?" I said, "No, who's that?" She said, "Check out his podcast."
Cool.
It blew my fucking mind.
Awesome.
And I couldn't stop listening to
That's
you.
So cool.
Yeah, I've gone back into Joey Diaz's podcast of 5 years ago. I'm digging deep into it, you know?
I love Joey Diaz because, like, you know, Buddhists, and I identify as a Buddhist, so Buddhists, like me, we talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
The levels of it, the noble truths, the, what do you call it, the perfections, the paramitas, the this and that, and this and that, this and that.
Six perfections, right, yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, as far as like a living practice, you know, I don't know. I don't know how I'm doing there, you know, but someone like Joey Diaz.
I think you're doing fucking good, man.
Thank you, brother.
Really good.
But Joey Diaz, you run into him, and he doesn't really talk about Buddhism. It reminds me of what Jack Kornfield said to me. He said, we don't want you to be a Buddhist. We want you to be the Buddha.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I think you are an important part of what's going on in the Dharma in the West right now with your show.
I hope so.
I really believe that.
What is going on? Well, first of all, do you think for people listening, you could talk a little bit about what the Dharma mean, what the Dharma is, even because maybe people listening don't aren't clear on what that term is.
But I want to just back it up a little bit because I was thinking about some of the things that I've been pondering, and one of those is I've had a lot of Buddhist teachers over the years, a lot of, you know, Rinpoches and gurus, and there's scandals. You tell me about this. You said it. I was talking to you about my third ex-wife or something, and that she got involved in Shambhala.
Yeah.
And then you said, oh, is she involved in the scandal?
Yeah.
And so I went to look this up.
Yeah.
And it turns out she is the secretary of the wife of Trungpa Son, whatever his, what is his name?
I don't know.
Sagyang Mipham.
Yeah, that's it.
She's his wife's secretary. So she's like right in there in the inner circle.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. What'd she have to say?
I didn't call her. I haven't called her. But I might. I, you know, I don't know.
We'll see. When you see that, man, when you see like this kind of like sort of flying apart that's happening in that way, you know, which is not just there. It's like, you know, those women talk to the Dalai Lama about this. And like, you go back and like, you know, if you look at like Buddha, the Buddhist history with women in general, and the misogyny and the patriarchy and the like complete dismissal of women.
Yeah. Yeah.
As being like a road bump.
Yeah.
Basically a kind of just a road bump to realization, like something you just got to like look out for women.
You can't. Yeah. Right now, two women are my main spiritual teachers.
Who are these?
One is a former nun. She was ordained for 27 years and gave back her robes. Her name is Tenzin Kacho. And another one is called Lobsang Drime, who is still a teacher. She's amazing.
Is this Nyingma?
No, they're part of Mahayana. They're part of the FPMT.
What is the FPMT?
The Foundation for the Preservation of Mahayana Buddhism.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Acronyms don't.
Yeah. So she's the director of a place called the Land of Medicine Buddha. And when I got sick, I picked up, through Nyingma, I picked up a medicine Buddha. I called up there. I called up to talk to Tarthang Tulku, who's the head cat.
Yeah.
Who's got some stories around him too that, you know, people question. And I called him and he said, he introduced me to the Tanka, the deity of the medicine Buddha, Guru Medicine Buddha. And I wanted to delve a little deeper into it. And I found that there was up in Northern California, a retreat that was going to happen on the medicine Buddha. And I went up there and this nun, Venerable Drime, was teaching it. And that saved my life, man.
You mean, but
it literally saved my life.
It cured you.
It cured me.
What were you sick with?
Cancer.
Which kind?
Bad kind. I had it was a variation of lymphoma.
Oh,
and
man.
It was called mantle cell lymphoma.
Jesus.
That put me to the edge of the fucking world. And I would go in. I went for 9 months of chemo. And I would go in to CEDARS every other week to stay there for 4 days to get an infusion. And I would go in with my tankas and my mantras and my underground comic books. And I would sit there for 4 days with my beads. And it was fucking incredible.
Wow.
And in addition to the chemo and a good doctor and my wife, all that shit saved my life. That was 18 years ago.
Wow.
And I put that away.
Congratulations.
You know? Thank you. It's great. Yeah. And I never talk about it. I don't want to talk about it because I don't want it to be to stigmatize me in any way. But now I'm in a position that it's so far in back of me. And if somebody has a problem out there, Medicine Buddha is the way. And it's being taught by a teacher. And he's one of the only gurus I know in Buddhism right now that is not involved in any sort of scandal.
Oh, fuck.
The Dalai Lama is one of them. And there are so many others that are just like, oh, are you kidding me? So I said, and I was going to answer the question, what is the Dharma? The Dharma is the work, the teachings of the Buddha. It's the teachings that Buddha gave after he sat under the Bodhi tree and came out of the meditation, and he taught for several months, and he was developing the Sangha. The Sangha is the group that studied with the Buddha, and he talks about the turning of the wheel, the turning of the wheel of the Dharma. That's the teaching. And so that's what I was getting. And this teacher, his name, Lama Zopa Rinpoche. He came here in 70. That's when the wave of these Buddhists came, these Rinpoches came to the West.
What is that? Why did that, was that planned out?
I don't know, man. I really don't know. I think it was. I think maybe His Holiness or the Karmapa came then and His Holiness hadn't come yet, but it could very well have been. But there's a whole wave. They all came out of Tibet. They escaped Tibet. They went to Dharamsala, and then they started coming to the United States. I got to find that. I'm going to get the answer to that.
We didn't just get them. We also got Ram Dass. You know, we got like there was this like incredible infusion of Eastern mysticism and philosophy and the Dharma that injected itself into mainstream culture in the United States.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And it intertwined weirdly with this like wave of like comedy.
True, because I didn't know. It's absolutely true. I don't know why. I don't know how. But
Gary Shandling, the whole documentary.
I didn't see that documentary. Gary Shandling studied with Thich Nhat Hanh, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He worked with me on Welcome Back.
Holy shit, man.
Yeah, and I have no idea that he was, you know, practicing. He's doing it a long time.
Yes, he was.
He was, you know, it was important to his existence, too.
Well, I mean, it is. I mean, to me, it's like, as a fellow cancer survivor but not quite so bad. Just had one of my balls snipped off and got some radiation, but still fucking scary and still makes you sick and still teaches you something. You know, the great teaching.
That's what it was for me.
Yeah.
Impermanence.
That's it.
You know, impermanence, you know?
Yeah. Because you do. I mean, I remember like walking around before that. And really toying with the idea, you know, maybe this is like some kind of dream and maybe I'm immortal. but they're going to like, I'm not going to die. Maybe I'm not one who doesn't get sick. You know, you hear like all these people.
Yeah. No, I know that. I know that.
And I really believe, I didn't believe it, but it's just kind of the sense of like, you know, people get sick. My mom got sick, but not me. And then
it's always not me, you know, yeah.
And that's one of the things the Buddha saw, of course, you know, prior to leaving his opulent life, he saw a dying, you know.
He went out into the street and he saw people dying. He didn't even know what that was. His parents were protecting him.
Yeah.
And he saw pain. He saw suffering.
Yeah.
He saw suffering. And so I had no idea. But I did it. My sister says to me, I went to the edge of the circus of horrors. I woke up one night in fucking intensive care, and the guy next to me couldn't take it anymore, and he pulled out his tubes, and he was flapping around like a fish on the floor, up and down, and they put the sirens on, and
shit.
Yeah, it was like, whoa. I never forget that moment. I have PTSD from that shit.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah, it sticks with me. You know, and so going back, my thought was we're jumping all over the place, but my thought was that there are so many of these teachers that are taking advantage of students, of yeah. women, of the Me Too stuff,
yeah.
that what am I going to do? You know? And what I was going to do, this is just last night, I got to stay with the Dharma. That doesn't mean the teachings aren't good. What it means is I just got to find the right teacher.
Right.
You know, and that's where it's at for me. I love the Dharma. I love the Buddha. I love the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama has performed miracles for me. I mean fucking miracles. I saw it.
Oh, yeah, man. I've been around.
I saw it, man.
I don't think, you know, weirdly with Buddhism or like kind of the neophyte phase I'm at right now.
No, you're not.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But, you know, I mean, in the sense of like, one of the things I love that Trump has said is, you know, it's good to kind of like when you're starting off just to realize, oh, we're absolute fools. So we have something to work from, you know, because if we're going to start off from a different spot.
Yeah.
When I went to college, I needed this attitude of like, I don't know this yet. Because if I knew it, I wouldn't need to go to college, you know.
Oh, that's good.
You know, with all things like that, you know.
Where did you go to school?
Warren Wilson, this liberal
it's
arts.
It's a great school, man. Yes, North Carolina?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of the schools my daughter was thinking about going to.
Oh, it's great.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Great
fucking school. They taught you how to garden and grow things.
I mean, one of my favorite professors there. I remember sitting down for the first day of class and like, you know, this is like a super liberal arts school. And like we sat down under a tree and the first lecture he gave was just drop out, guys. Like, this is a mistake. He's like, trust me, it's better for you to spend this money on travel.
I would say, I taught also, and I would say that to the students too. And they wanted to go to film school. I was like, this is a fucking waste of time.
You're honest. I mean, that's the best. And I remember sitting there and he goes, this is like one of the great teachings I got in my life, actually,
wow.
was he goes, here's the way it works. Right now, life seems kind of slow to you. You know when you're speeding up on a street and the telephone poles start going by?
Yeah.
He's like, that's what's going to happen
to you. Wow.
Wow. Yeah. And so don't really, you shouldn't be here right now. Like, just go to India is what he said. And then he goes, like, I know you think you can't go to India. I know you think you don't have enough money or you can't figure out a way to do it, but you can figure it out. So just drop out of school now and go to India. But to get back to the point at hand here, in a weird way, like my sense in talking about Buddhism, even though I yap about it too much, is a feeling like, man, I don't want to spoil it. Like the way I don't want to talk about Westworld or something, the way I don't want to talk about a great show or something, because I think there are things that when I was like learning about Buddhism in the beginning or when I had an idea of Buddhism, you know, actually, the first time I heard about Buddhism, I was with my friend Emil on acid at Warren Wilson, and I'm tripping and it's cold and we're sitting outside in the cold. I'm in my jacket. Shivering, and he's like, Duncan, listen to this. Life is suffering. And I was like, oh, weird. He goes, that's called dukkha. And he goes, you know, and the cause of suffering is attachment. That's I think it's called tanha, I think is the second one. I can't remember the names get mixed up. And they have to do. And I remember I'm tripping and I'm like, whoa, I think I said to him, or I thought, what is this, some kind of Eskimo religion or something? Like, that's what, because I was cold. But he goes, that's Buddhism. And I was like, what the fuck? Holy shit. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Because, you know, when we talk about the teachers in particular and the problems that we're experiencing right now, which are very sad, very problematic for a lot of different reasons. You know, number one, it's hurting people who trusted.
Right.
Power dynamics, all of it. And then on top of that, there's like an additional problem, which is, doesn't the Dharma heal? Doesn't the Dharma shift and transform? And if the Dharma is truly transformative, then what? How did you rationalize this type of aggression? I don't know the answers to these questions at all. But what's cool about Buddhism is, regardless of these things that are happening and probably have happened again and again and just haven't been documented, I don't know, we have a very scientific, systematic approach to suffering.
That's what I was going to say. And to healing.
And to healing. Yeah. That is like, though we do need the teachers, we have to, it's a fundamental component from my own experience.
You can't do it on your own.
No way.
You can have all the books in the world, but you still need to have a teacher to help you.
You have to.
I think that's what I understand.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of a little bit like if you're going to do the Olympic torch thing, unfortunately, you need people to pass the torch to.
Yeah.
In the passing of this Dharma, it's one component of it is knowledge, but there seems to be another component, right?
Oh, I think there is. I think there's something that I have no idea what it is, but it's some sort of transmission that I've received over the years. I think I've received it through the Karmapa. I've received it from Tathang Toku the first time I ever met him. First time I ever met a Buddhist teacher, he looked at me and said, what do you do? I said, I'm a producer in LA. He said, you work for me in Los Angeles. Mm. So I went out to my wife and I said, he's telling me I'm going to work for him. No fucking way. Next thing I know, I'm helping him distribute his books at the Bodhi Tree. I'm like schlepping books. And we had a guest house. I turned the room into a meditation center where people could walk in, you know?
Yeah, man.
So, but
man makes plans, God laughs.
Yeah.
And my teacher, you know, he has a similar story. My teacher's he's won Grammys.
Oh, David Nectarne.
Yeah,
yeah. Nectarne. Yeah, he's a great musician. I'm going to try to come to the November 16th night.
Cool,
I want to
man.
See that. I want to see that.
He smashed into Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, you know, and like this happens. You run into these people and it's like, that's the funniest thing about it is like you cross paths with Ram Dass, you cross paths with these teachers. And like you said, I was just at a dinner party with him and then my life. Something happened, which is why I asked you, what do you think that is? And that brings us to what you're talking about now, which is the transmission.
Yeah.
Dharma transmission, as it's called. What is that? Is this what is it? Is it magic? Is it an energy?
I can't answer that question specifically. I could just tell you from experiences that I've had, that I was talking to a friend of mine before I came. I'm sorry, Duncan. That was New Yorker with my hands moving all over the joint. I sent him an email. I said, Nicholas, I really would like to talk to you. There are a few things I want to discuss. And he emails me back. He said, this is really amazing. I'm in Los Angeles. He lives in Europe. I'm in Los Angeles today. What are you doing? And I said, well, I guess you picked up my message, you know, from a transmission. He said, we don't even need to have phones, you know. You and I talked about that the other day.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. I don't know what it is, Duncan. I don't know. All I know is there's some weird things that happened to me since I've been around Buddhism, and that's 40 years. The other night, I had a dream, and the dream was, it was really intense. I was looking at my computer screen and all I saw, I didn't see myself, but I saw the screen. I saw an email And the email was from you saying, I have to switch our appointment today. And I said, oh, fuck, man. Something must have come up. I'm really sorry. This is my dream.
Yeah.
And then I woke up like 3 hours later and I said, I better check my emails. And it wasn't. There was no email. It was just in my dream. I dreamt an email from you.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what that means, but that was certainly...
Was this when I canceled on you?
No, no. This was last night.
Okay,
this
good.
Is my anxiety about wanting to be here, well, that I'm dreaming your emails in front of me.
The weird thing that happened when I met you, which was really kind of mind-blowing to me, is I've been studying, I keep saying this, I don't know why I keep saying it. So I've been studying Buddhism with Nick Turn, and you know, his teacher's Chogyam Trungpa, so I'm Googling Kagyu Buddhism, and then within that, suddenly Nyingma, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, yeah.
Nyingma Buddhism pops up. And then I'm just Googling that. I still, from my research, I didn't really understand much of what it meant. But then the next day I meet you and you're like, oh, I practice Nyingma Buddhism, which is the second time in my life I've even heard of it.
You know, there's something, it's called Rime, R-I-M-E. And it's mixing different schools.
Okay.
It's being open to the different school. You can ask Nick Turn about that.
Okay.
And I believe, like, Lama Surya Das.
Sure.
He studies Buddhism, studies Nyingma and Kagyu.
Kagyu.
Kagyu. And he was a student of the Karmapa.
Okay.
And so he had a combination of both.
Ooh, that guy got me good.
And I thought you mentioning the Nyingma because of him, that you might have met him.
No, I didn't know he practiced Nyingma. He got me, and they get you. That's the other thing about Buddhists. They get you. You know, not in a bad way, but you do forget. And that these, you know, this is a lama.
He's heavy.
So, like, but he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, I know.
Right. You know, so he's like at this Buddhist, or rather, the Ram Dass retreat. And I've been up there doing these interviews, and I've been, like, putting on this show where I've been trying to act like I'm skeptical. But I'd started at that time to not really be skeptical anymore. But I felt like it was cooler to seem skeptical. So I was just trying to, you know, it was not truthful, you know, because I'd already been experiencing this love and opening and like, but it was, this was early on still for me, you know, I'm still skeptical. Sometimes I do get skeptical to this day.
Yeah.
I was putting on this show, you know, skepticism or something, trying to be cool. So, he comes up to me. It's the last day. It was perfect timing too. You know, he like really gave it to me on the last day. And, you know, in skillful means, they talk about these, I think it's, what is it? Four skillful means. One of them is the sword is like cutting.
Cutting. Yeah. Cutting.
And then there's some other ones, you know, including there's ways of doing it, but he did the right thing. I think I'll never forget it though.
Majurishi holds the sword of knowledge that he, I think that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So cutting through the bullshit, as they say, or cutting through spiritual materialism.
Yeah, yeah.
As Chogyam Trungpa wrote. But anyway, I remember, like, he came up to me in a freaking Hawaiian shirt, you know, so that and I'm not saying, like, he's just wearing it around the retreat. You see him, he's somebody, like, you think, like, this is a guy who's going to be giving you, like, burgers at a barbecue or something, man. Like, he just is, like, you don't realize this guy's trained. For years. Yeah.
He studied a long time. Still studying.
Yeah.
And teaches, you know, so when he's teaching, he's studying too.
Teaching. And he goes, hey, can I talk to you for just a quick second? I'm like, sure. We're talking. And he's like, you know, just might give you a little bit of criticism respectfully. He said in a really cool way. I was completely, all my defenses were down. I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Well, sure. He goes, you know, that thing you're doing where you act skeptical. He's like, that in like 20 years or 10 years, he's like, that's going to be the same thing as saying groovy all the time. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah,
that's great, man.
It's not going to age well. Fashionable cynicism isn't going to age well, man. And then he's like, also, you know, if you, by pretending you don't, I can't remember how he said it. He said it in a really cool way. He said it in a sweet way. The way I say it sounds sinister, But the way he did it was so sweet and bubbly. He's like, you know, also that kind of like, I can't remember, so forgive me, students of Lama Suryadas or Lama Suryadas, I mean, no disrespect. It's been a bit of time. But he said something along the lines of, you know, that kind of deception. He didn't even use those words. He said it in a very sweet way. He's, that kind of thing can kill you. You know, it could kind of rip you apart from the inside. He didn't say it like that, but that's, he was right. You can't fucking parade around. You can't do phony.
He picked it up, huh?
Yeah, and it was awesome. And then he was like, okay, well, you know, and he left. And I'm sitting there having been essentially flayed by a llama in the sweetest way, you know. And then and truly the most compassionate thing he could have done was that. It was great.
Wow.
You know.
It's great.
But that's...
Does he know that? Have you told him that?
I don't think I've ever told him that. I'll never talk to him again after he said that shit to me. What was he thinking? I'm just kidding.
When I saw... He's an interesting cat. When I saw him, we were at a talk of His Holiness's talk.
Yes.
Somewhere. I forget where. It was in New York. And at the break, we both got up and we would walk. I didn't know him. We were walking. I knew who he was. And we walked by... And he looked at me and said, how'd you like that? I thought it was pretty funny.
He does these like dad jokes.
Then he said, yeah. And then he said, where did you go to college? Was it in Queens or in Brooklyn? You know, Jewish, you know, enclaves. You know?
These Buddhists, man, like, that's the thing. It's not what you think it is, number one, right? Like probably unless if you haven't done any practice or you haven't spent any time with it, it might not be anything that you think it is. Like you think like, what did you think Buddhism was when you first heard about it without knowing anything about it? Did you have any sense of what it was?
I had no idea. I didn't know what, I was standing on the ocean in a caftan with psilocybin with Larry Hagman working on a comedy. I was producing a show that he was going. So you're asking how does, you know, the comedy blend in? So I was with Larry on a Sunday. Larry's Sundays.
Larry Hagman, can you tell everyone who that is in case they don't know?
Oh, he was one of the great comedians, one of the great comics, one of the great actors. He was in, he was like, you know, an iconic
I Dream actor. Of Jeannie?
I Dream of Jeannie and JR in Dallas. And I produced a show, a pilot with him.
I forgot that.
He was J.I. I had the cowboy hat. Yeah. And I had the cowboy. He had the cowboy hat. And he had a house in Malibu. And he had a beautiful wife. They're both deceased now. And on Sundays, he had a day of silence. Every day, every Sunday, he stayed in silence, which was a great thing. And I was producing a pilot that it was called Here We Go Again. It went on the air, but it didn't do very well. So it was on in like 11 weeks, it was off. But I became very close with Larry. And where was I going with this? He asked me how I knew about Buddhism. And so he's standing out at the ocean and I'm standing next to him. He's in silence. He's looking out at the sunset and he's going, what did he say? Om Mani Padme Om. And he's doing this chant. Om Mani Padme Om. I'd never heard that before. And Om Mani Padme Om. So it's like a basic, you know, chant, Avalokiteshvara. It's asking for compassion, to blessing your friends.
Behold the jewel.
Yeah.
In the heart of the lotus.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so he explains that to me, and I like the sound, the vibration of it.
Yeah.
And I feel it going through me, and that's all I knew. And I didn't know what.
Were you on acid too?
Psilocybin.
Oh, psilocybin.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I thought LSD because I know Hagman was at that time was doing the LSD therapy that people were doing back then. Didn't he use it to treat his alcoholism or something? Or am I confusing him with someone?
He liked, as he told me, he liked to have the trickle of champagne going through his body all day long. And I did too. And so
I still do.
Yeah. So he liked that. It was very sensible. You know, but he was drinking real bad shit. He was drinking La Domaine, which was like $3 a bottle.
Why would he do that? That makes no sense.
I don't know. But anyway, so he was liking to smoke and all that, but it was psilocybin. I don't think he was doing any sort of acid treatment. I'm not sure. I could be wrong.
A quick Google search. I feel like I have to do it just so that I can clear his name from such a terrible accusation. Let's see. Larry Hagman, LSD therapy. Let me look it up real quick. Could be wrong. You know what it is? No, it's not LSD therapy. It's that there is a wonderful clip of Larry Hagman saying all politicians should use LSD. That's it.
That too. That's good.
But so
he was doing psilocybin. He had it ground up. He would snort it or eat a little bit of it. Mm. And he had a lot of that. And I remember going to the Grateful Dead concert at the Hollywood Bowl. Now, I'm in Hollywood like 2 years, man. I'm a kid. And I was going to the Hollywood Bowl. I'm sitting in the back of Larry's van. He had a Chevrolet step van, the size of a food truck. And he had a dome in it, and he had a hammock in it.
Wow.
And I'm sitting in the hammock. He puts me in the hammock. He's in the captain's seat. And we're off to the bowl to see the Grateful Dead. It was wonderful.
That is the coolest story. I mean, man, I just can't even imagine.
Yeah,
standing in the ocean with Larry Hagman,
yeah, it was
tripping
wonderful.
On mushrooms, yeah. And that's where you heard Om Mani Padme Om for the first time?
Yeah.
It's like, what is, I mean, and then when you consider where that vibration came from, or comes from, so I guess if you wanted to get into the semantics of it.
Yeah.
But what do you think, behold the jewel in the heart of the lotus means?
I think the jewel is the Dharma. Or the Buddha that was in the heart of the lotus, and it's experiencing that. It's you hearing that sound, which is the sound of, I think that's the sound of the Buddha. The sound of everything. Vajra Guru Pema City Om. That was the Vajra Guru mantra, which is very similar to Om Mani Padme Om. But Om Mani Padme Om is called the six syllable mantra. But what I just did was a Nyingma mantra that Padmasambhava, who brought Buddhism to Tibet in the 8th century, did. I get them mixed up. I got too much shit running in my head.
Mm.
So anyway,
that was intense, man.
Oh, good. We could do that for an hour if you'd like.
I would like that. I love doing that. I've had a couple of like mind blowing psychedelic experiences when it comes to religion. One of them, reading the Book of John on LSD, and then this like thought occurred to me. Somebody wrote this, you know, and that was like a really intense moment because somehow I'd forgotten that this was written by someone. I don't know, you know, like it just been here or something. But then you realize like, wait, I can almost trace the personality. I can almost not just trace the person. And like when I'm around the, actually I think it is a verse in the New Testament, isn't it? You can know the Father by the Son.
Uh-huh.
And there's like a thumbprint that is in the scripture of something. I don't know what exactly, but it's a thumbprint. I don't know what it is. In the same way saying, what's this transmission thing? I don't know. But similarly, and this is something I've talked about with David a little bit, at some point, and Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche talks about this, at some point after gaining realization, or whatever happened to this person called the Buddha, which is a true historic figure, it happened. He started talking. He was not talking, and then he started talking. And there was this thing that he was now, or had found, or saw, or realized, or connected with, or I don't know the right words for it, merged with, or melted into, or something. And he was quiet. And then he started talking. And then something came out. He had to take this thing that was before language, shunyata, or whatever you want to call it, the fruitful emptiness, the clear light, and it had to turn it into words. And there was some first moment where that happened. And then we have these sounds now. Om Mani Padme Om. And you can see this thumbprint in it or something, right? Like there's a thing alive.
Oh, yeah. And his voice, when it came out, if you were sitting in front of him, it was like a bell. You know when they ring the bell? Bong, beautiful yeah. sound. That's what it would sound like. But if you were 3 miles away, it would sound equally as powerful and as beautiful as the same. So when the Buddha started talking, you didn't have to be right in front of him. It just spread out. I'm sorry. It spread out to the land, to the people.
Yeah, it was, and it spread out through time.
Yeah.
It was I think of these things as like a temporal nuclear spiritual bomb that was detonating and rippling the time-space continuum all the way to the point up until right now.
Because right.
Still the ripples of that moment. We are in the ripple of the moment of this being's realization. It's not this thing didn't happen in the past. The past is not as fog. It's like it's fog. And there's a landscape, and the past and the present and the future are this foggy thing on top of this like thing that is not, doesn't seem to be very touched by transient phenomena, you know? And so that's where one of the weird traps or tricks of Buddhism is you can start thinking it's archaic, primitive, antiquated, past thing, you know? And that's one of the, I think the spoilers I don't want to do necessarily is suddenly you realize like, wait, fuck. It's still now. Oh, the bell ringing thing? Oh, shit. You could be thousands of years away from it. And still hear it just as clear. If you just listen a little bit, that's where it's pretty intense to me. And then you realize, oh, I see what meditation is, you know? Because if you don't, like, when I'm thinking of meditation or GOM, self-knowing or whatever, I've always thought of it as, like, prior to, like, working with a teacher. And he didn't tell me this shit, P.S. So I'm sorry, David, if this is completely off the mark or something. But prior to working with a teacher, I had this concept of meditation of being really kind of painful, boring, like kind of like a uncomfortable position in yoga, a sort of thing you do in the way you jog or do push-ups or some shit. And I didn't know that what you were doing is getting quiet enough so you could hear that bell ringing, you know. I didn't realize that's what it was. And then maybe you hear just a second of that bell, even if it's just a second. And you're like, wait a minute, what is that? I want to hear that again. And then you don't get to hear it again because you're fucking
because you're thinking about it. You know, I'll tell you one thing. What you just gave me is a great teaching. Just being here with you is a teaching.
Oh, thank you.
It's true, Duncan.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm learning a lot from you.
I'm learning a lot from you. This bell idea is beautiful. I love it so much. And that's why what's really funny about it. Oh, there it is. When you were doing that chant, after you finished, I wanted to grab this.
Oh, let's hear it. Ah! That's my bell.
You see, that's the vajra at the top of the bell.
Yeah, 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 I see that. Sometimes it's good to have the vajra and the bell, because the Buddha has he's holding a vajra and a bell. So in one of my visualizations when I do the six yoga practice, I visualize the Buddha sitting on a seat of a moon seat and a sun seat, as if it was slices of cheese, and the Buddha is sitting there, and he's holding his consort with him, and he's holding a vajra, which is like the dorje, the lightning bolt symbol, and the bell. And then I take refuge in the three jewels. The three jewels being the Sangha, the Dharma, and the Buddha. Take refuge in those every day. And then I recite a mantra to the, depends which one I do, but you know, we could do Om Mani Padme Om right now, if we like. Om Mani Padme Om. Om Mani Padme Om. Om Mani Padme Wow.
Yeah.
Your face was right. That was really trippy, man. That concludes this episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. That was amazing what I just saw.
What'd you see?
Holy shit, man. It was timeless. It was completely timeless. You filled up. I saw you, but your head was just floating. Filling up my whole screen. It was amazing. And you were in me. I was, you were in me.
That's what I was about to tell you. Oh, you were just seeing some reflection of yourself.
That could be.
Well, because you have this practice, you know, you can't, that thing you're doing, I don't know. The funniest thing about this, the Dharma, I think, or talking about this stuff is, it's like a river. It's weird because it's like a river and it's streams going into a river or something, and the streams are like, no, you're the one making the river. you're the one making the river. All these streams. This is the episode. This is the first segment. We're going to do, can we do this in a month?
I'd love to.
Thank you so much.
I'd love to.
Because we didn't.
Are we okay? Are we okay? You want more?
I think we got it. I don't think we can follow that.
No. Well, we can, because I got something I want to give you before we go.
Okay.
Unless you already have it. I have two things I wanted to give you. Oh, yeah. Do you know this book?
No, I do not. It's When I Was Cool, My Life at the Jack Kerouac School by Sam Kochner.
Yeah, at the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics. And that's the school at Naropa that Trungpa was teaching at and Ginsberg was teaching at. And this describes a season with Trungpa and Ginsberg at the school.
Holy shit. Is that Burroughs?
Yeah, Burroughs.
Who's in the middle here?
Yeah, that's Burroughs. And I think it's Phil Walden is there. He's a Zen teacher too.
Cool. San Francisco. Thank you so much.
It's a great book.
Thank you.
It's a great book.
Oh, I love it.
It's a wild, it's crazy wisdom.
Thank you very much.
Book. My pleasure. And I got one other thing that I thought you were going to ask me about Nyingma. And this is, as I was leaving, in a little box I have, this was there. This was a Christmas card I got last year. I'm giving you, I'm recycling a card for you. That's my Christmas card to you, Duncan, to you and Aaron and the baby.
I just want to like, just only because we're talking about my, you know, Nick Turn has this term called tendril. It's a Tibetan term, I think, Sanskrit term. I'm not sure. Tibetan, I believe. But the term means the weird synchronicities that happen in relation to a practice. And you're not supposed to, you're supposed to disown them, is what Trump says. Just don't get too
That becomes spiritual materialism if you talk about them.
You get addicted to miracles.
Yeah, right.
But a friend of mine and I were texting just today, and I said, my compassion muscle is weak. And she said, oh, that's something you can work on. And I said, and she said, I'm not a very compassionate person by nature. I work on that every day of my life. And then you give me this thing and I'm just going to read it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. That's an important muscle. That's the muscle you need for enlightenment.
Yeah.
Yeah, look.
Holy shit, you have compassion tattooed on your arm.
Remember, I was a punk also. And let's just mention my podcast for 1 second. Could we mention it?
No, we're going to talk about it, but I'm going to read this card first. And also, as an aside, I think it's cooler to have compassion tattooed on your arm than Lucifer on your chest.
I don't have Lucifer. But that, don't give me any ideas. I don't want to make that commitment to Lucifer.
What's that? The tattoo?
Yeah.
It's a pretty sounding word, name.
Yeah.
Too bad. It's like.
I don't know. I'll ask the guy I'm having dinner with tonight and see what he says.
Who you have? Oh, about Lucifer?
Yeah.
That's for podcast two. I'm going to read this and then let's talk about your podcast for a second.
Okay. Can I go to the restroom?
Yeah, of course. Pausing now.
Sorry. And Phil Spector did that to me.
What did he do?
Well, he held me at gunpoint in his house. That's a long story.
I'm recording. Should I delete that?
No, I don't care. It's on another part. I don't care. I mean, but he was amazing. So he had me locked in his house. I wanted him to do the music for a pilot I was producing.
Yeah.
So I'm locked in his house with George, and he locked me in, and I'm sitting there for like 4 hours, and his gun is out, and you know, but he looks at me and he says, "Why are you here?" I said, "You know why I'm here. I wanted you to do the music for this pilot that I'm producing." And he said, "No, you're here because you want to go back and tell people I drink too much, I take drugs, and I play with guns." And with that, he takes his jacket off, and he's wearing the biggest gun I've ever seen.
Jesus Christ.
Right. And now the gun comes out, and I'm locked there. But he was prophetic because I'm still talking. It's one of my best stories. I've been telling people that Phil Spector held me at gunpoint. I liked him. Anyway.
Cocaine.
No.
Really?
No drugs. Not
How do you
that I
get
saw.
To the point of paranoia where you're holding guns on
I
people?
I think it might have been bipolar medications.
Yeah, okay,
I don't know, but it was also he was drinking Manischewitz wine. You know what Manischewitz is? It's like the cheap Jewish wine you have at a seder. You know, he was drinking it right out of the bottle. It was like
What is going on with these comedic or artistic teachers of yours that are always drinking cheap booze? You've got Hagman drinking bad champagne. You've got Spector drinking Manischewitz.
Who else was drinking? I don't know. Trungpa. Well, he was drinking sake.
Sake. I don't know what quality of sake he was drinking.
I bet it was good. And I'm going to use something my wife got me as a gift. And I've never used it before.
What, your flask?
Yeah.
What's in there?
Jameson.
Okay. You are the best person. I swear to God. It's so cool meeting you. I'm so glad we're friends.
I love it, Duncan. I love you, man.
I love you too. I want to read this card that you regifted me. Compassion is the bridge, the spiritual foundation for peace, harmony, and balance. In the beginning, our compassion is like a candle. Gradually, we need to develop compassion as radiant as the sun. When compassion is as close as our breath, as alive as our blood, then we will understand how to live and work in the world effectively and to be of help to both ourselves and others. Tarthong Pulku Rinpoche, gesture of balance. Cheers.
Would you like some of this?
I'd love some. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Mm. Wow. I am lucky.
Me too. That's what I was thinking about, how lucky my day is today, that I'm getting to come over here, and now this proves that. And then my conversation this morning with my friend who's in from Berlin, but he said, I can't tell you his name because he said, I'm here secretly. And so tonight I get to talk to him. And that's it, you know, so.
Oh, wait a minute.
What?
I'm not going to, I have a guess about what he's doing in town, but I'm not going to mention it. Because I know there's like some kind of like there's like a music thing happening with Ableton right now in Berlin. And I don't know. Is he a musician?
No. Well, okay. Yes, he is. But he's here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's in LA. It's happening.
Oh, really?
So, I don't know. You should ask him if he's like going to the Ableton. There's some kind of like crazy hardcore like music convention happening.
Oh, right? Really?
Yeah. Anyway,
I'll ask him. I don't know. I don't think that's the case. I think it has to do with a book he's writing. I'll tell you about it at another point. I can't right now, but it's pretty far out.
I want to jump into your podcast real quick.
Oh, thank you.
Now, I know what your podcast is about, but I also know there's right now some limits on like the I think there's limits on talking about it a little bit. So you just describe it to me and I'll ask questions and you tell me what you can.
Well, it's a true crime podcast. It's based on a murder that took place in 1982 in Los Angeles. I knew the guy personally. He was a friend. He was also a very strong meditator. He's pictures of him meditating all over the place. And he was bludgeoned to death in his loft downtown in Los Angeles. And
What was he bludgeoned to death with?
From what I'm told, it was a circus mallet. So you know those guys, when they're putting tents together?
Yeah.
It was one of those.
Yeah, it's also like, you know, it's like the miniaturized version of what you use when you're doing whack-a-mole. It's the thing that you hit, the thing to test your strength.
Yeah,
with.
Yeah.
Like, well, all this carnival.
Yeah, that's what it was. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm investigating that. And there's several people that are suspects that I have right now. I have in my studio, I call it my room, because all I got is I live in a room. And one wall is completely filled with names, pictures, strings. It's my murder wall.
You have an actual murder wall.
Yeah, I have it. Yeah.
But we talked about this, and I don't want to give away the podcast at all, but I've had it happen to me a couple of times talking to people. I got this weird sense of danger like you were like unraveling something that was maybe going to put you in some kind of like predicament.
You know, look, cancer put me in a fucking predicament. You know, I went to the edge. I'm okay. I'm not worried about any of that shit.
Cancer is one thing, but people who bludgeon other people to death with mallets, that's a different ball of wax.
I watch my back, but although I must say yesterday I was, checking out, my wife said that she would like to buy me a computer for my birthday. And I said, no, maybe you want to get me some Velcro vest.
You know? What do you mean, like a bulletproof vest?
Yeah.
Yeah, because when we were talking about it, and without giving too much of this away, I got the sense that like people were starting to like get weird around you because you were like, this is real.
This is real. I'm not making, this is not fiction.
No, I know that, but I mean, it's like, it's not just like, it's not real in this. I don't question that it's not real. What I'm saying is this is an unsolved murder. And if your show, if you do solve it, somebody goes to jail.
Somebody's going to be pissed off at me.
Somebody's a murderer.
Yeah, a murderer will be very, very pissed off at me.
But from what
I have a few suspects. I'm not going to say who they are right now. But, I mean, and I'm learning things as I talk to... This involved the punk underground. I was, with all the Buddhism stuff, I was a hardcore punk.
I don't think anything's changed that much.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's good. I really appreciate that, Duncan.
Particularly coming from you.
That's fucking awesome. And so I know everybody in this scene. I'm talking to people in the hardest core of the LA punk scene. People that were in the Germs. Don Bowles is in it. Tequila Mockingbird. Spit Sticks from Fear. Who else do I got on it? The Wall. I mean, just a lot of. I'm saying these names because the names give you an indication of who might have done it. You know, not who might have done it. No. Excuse me. Of who I'm talking to, and where I'm getting my information from.
It was like, you know, there's that documentary on. I think it was the New York party scene.
Oh, yeah, Club Kids.
Yeah, where there's that murder. That
Yeah. Somebody. That guy who, yeah. It's like that.
Yeah, because you get
that.
These scenes and that
this,
pop up.
This guy, and you know, Penelope Spheeris is going to be in it. Do you know Penelope?
Yeah.
She directed Decline of Western Civilization.
Oh, okay.
I'm the guys in the Chili Peppers. I used to go to a club. It was called the Zero Club. It was owned by David Lee Roth. It was like going into the third world. It was an after-hours club that everybody went to after the bars closed, and there was nowhere to go. And you would go to the Zero, and there was the craziest shenanigans that were going on there. There were skateboarders. There were punks. There were there was drugs, and there were new wavers. There was a difference between the punks and the new wavers. And they were all there, and we were all mixing together. And in this scene, and we were all going to the Club Lingerie and a club on Sunset called On Sunset. And within this scene, suddenly, Peter Ivers, who is one of the most wonderful guys around, was murdered. And while we were at this great party, being high and laughing, it was like a shroud was thrown over, a blanket, man, was thrown over us. Because now we didn't know whether or not there was a murderer crawling around on the scene in the clubs. You didn't know. And one of the places I would go every night when I, and you know, granted there were drugs going around on this scene and drugs,
sure.
A lot of them that kept you up all night.
Sure.
And so when there was nowhere to go after the Zero, after the nightclub, after the bars closed, the Club Lingerie, the Cafe de Grand, Madame Wang's, you would go to the Zero Club, where all the musicians were, and we were all there. After the Zero closed at 5 a.m, a few select few would go over to David Jove's cave. Mm-hmm. And we would go to David Jove's cave where we got locked in, where he was editing the New Wave Theater, and he was doing intense amounts of blow. We all were.
Sure.
And we were staying up all night watching him doing his editing.
Wow.
And he would have a gun on the table. And he was very, very unpredictable. He was a student of Crowley's.
Oh, he's, shit.
He studied the OTO.
Holy shit.
He was studying to cross the Great Abyss. And all of this shit was going on at once. And so Peter wanted to... I'm not giving anything away right now on the podcast, but Peter wanted to not be the host of the New Wave. He was the host of the New Wave Theater. He was the voice of David Jove.
Yeah.
And when you went to David Jove's house, he locked you in. And it was all dark except the red walls. And there was eucalyptus coming through the air conditioner, through the vents.
Fuck and- that. Fuck that. That's it for me. I'm out, man. I'm out. I want to get out of the store. That's the one that's like where I'm melted.
But you can't get out because you're locked in.
Shit.
There's a 2x4 over the door with padlocks on the door. And so I would go there every other night. And there was a whole group of us that were there.
He knew his energy would make it so people wanted to run.
Yeah.
He had to lock it.
He locked in. You couldn't run. And you stayed with he was a warlock too. He was a powerful fucking guy. I think it was a cult. And that's one of the things
it's definitely a temple.
Yeah, it was definitely a temple. And we talked about the OTO and he was part of that. And he studied aliens. He has a website that's like fucking impossible, man. It's called The Whole Truth. And it's his experience with aliens. I mean, this guy was fucking unbelievable.
What? But the eucalyptus, and now you've got like, and you have the gun, and the gun is like, it's functioning on a bunch of different levels, but it's producing a very specific type of tension or tightness in the air. And then
you got it, Duncan. You got it.
Yeah.
And so we were there. I was there. And suddenly, Peter Ivers, the host of David's show, the New Wave Theater, was murdered. He was murdered. This guy was murdered, and the show had just been picked up by USA Cable. It was going from a public access show to a national network show, and Peter wanted to quit the show, and David went ballistic. He didn't want to let him quit the show. And when he told this to David, that was the end of it. Peter went home that night to his loft downtown on the Lower East Side, but downtown LA, and he was bludgeoned to death.
Well, now you have you have this situation where you have a kind of cult figure and followers, and you get the sense that it was an organized crime, murder style. Something mixed in with sacrifice.
And I've been talking to the police. I've been down at the cold case division. I have the coroner's report. I'm trying to get them to activate this. And I've got 80 people I've spoken to.
Why have you chosen not to diminish my own profession, but why have you chosen the podcast route instead of turning this into a documentary, a video documentary? Why podcast instead of filming?
Well, because, as you know, the world of the podcast right now, I'm going to sound like a greedy producer, but the best route to produce something that you're talking about is through the podcast.
That's true.
I mean, so I see this. The end game is not the podcast, although I have the most creative freedom right now in the podcast.
Let's just get this out, and I'm sorry to be a weirdo here. Would you ever kill yourself?
No.
You would never kill yourself?
No.
You would never hang yourself, shoot yourself?
No.
Okay.
No.
So if anything happens to you...
Yeah, thank you, Duncan. I appreciate that. Somebody did it.
Okay.
That's very nice of you to ask.
Sure.
And to protect me in that way. No, I would never walk in front of a bus. I would never do any of that shit.
Okay.
No. No matter where I was, what stage I was in. So I'm not killing myself. I'm not on a fucking suicidal mission.
I'm just saying if something, like, it just, to me, this has a weird feeling to it that's like, that's really intense, and I don't know, man. I don't want to be like, my problem is I'm always like, I'm the ghost person. I'm just saying, be careful. Because when you're talking about this, there's a feeling in it that's like, gives me goosebumps. I want to listen to the podcast, but you're talking about the podcast on my podcast before the podcast is even out, meaning that somebody could hear and be like, fuck that. I don't want this out. You're putting yourself in a little bit of danger.
Go for it.
No, don't.
Oh, you're not gonna put it out? You're not gonna talk about it?
I'm putting this out. I'm telling, no, when you say go for it, I'm saying like, who? Oh, I thought you meant go for it. Like the person, the malicious person listening is like, no.
No. Listen to that. You could put it out. This is, I'm teasing the podcast that I'm doing.
You're doing a great job. I can't wait to, do you have a timeline when we can expect to get the first episode?
They're saying that they're expecting me to spend a year working on it. It's going to be like, you know, 10, 12 episodes. And it's going on a new platform. So I'm working on it now. So it's not going to be out for a while.
So,
but
okay.
You could talk about this if you wanted to.
2019.
Yeah, 2019.
So you'll be on the podcast, this podcast, many times leading up to
it. I love it.
I can't wait. And you can keep teasing little pieces of it.
I love it. Do you mind if I do that?
I know. Of course not. It's legal in California. Thank you so much. I think we should wrap it up. You got to go to dinner with your friend. Thank you so much.
Erin looked at that. Do you remember what she said? She had me laughing.
What'd she say?
She said, what is that? It's scaring me. And when it turned green, I said, is that scaring you? Is that scaring you? And she said, not as much.
Oh, yeah. It's the red color was scared. The vaporizer red technology. I love that they're like, we're witnessing like computers are advancing. Music gear is advancing, but also like weed consumption.
This is part of the internet of all things. This is connected to my smartphone. I can tell you the temperature on that. I could raise and lower it from my smartphone. It's connected.
Crafty.
Yeah, it's really good, man. It's a really good one.
I want one.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's the most gentle form of taking weed.
Is there like actual flowers in here?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, nice little buds. It's a combination.
Cool. By the way, we're not sponsored by Crafty Friends. I just happen to have this in my hand right now. Just buzzed.
Yeah.
Let's wrap it up.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Duncan, I love you, brother. You're my brother.
I love you too. Likewise. Thank you so much.
So fucking
good.
Let's
do this again. Let's do it every month, man.
I'm in.
Okay. Thank you. I'm in. Awesome. Yeah. That was so cool. That was my new friend, Alan Sachs, everybody. He will most certainly be back. Thank you guys so much for listening. A big thank you to all of our sponsors and friends. If you enjoy this podcast, won't you give us a nice rating on iTunes and subscribe to us? We've got some great episodes on the way. Until then, I hope that you are... Oh, wait. You know what? I just learned this. This is a Buddhist, kind of like a Buddhist, I don't know if you'd call it a prayer. This is a thing you can do before and after you meditate. You could say this, even if you don't feel it. I'm going to change it for the podcast. You could do whatever you want with it. May all of you be happy. May all of you be free from suffering. May all of you experience joy in the happiness of others. And may all of you remain equanimity, free from attachment, aversion, and ignorance. Until next time, Hare Krishna.